Scooby Dooby Doo kicks like poo. You're such a disappointment. See ya, Scooby Doo. Your days are through. It's time for unemployment.
When I hear it now with music behind it, the rhythm was a little
terrible.
Off.
Yeah, it was off. Makes it sound worse with the music. Come on, it was one of my best moments ever.
Ken's more of an a cappella guy, Josh. I appreciate the effort that you and Mike Barker put into that, but let's, much like Michael Vick, let's play to the man's strengths, shall we?
Plus we'll now be fined for using copyrighted music for Killer Chihuahua's Scooby-Doo effort.
It's worth it. If we get fined and take it off the air for that, it's worth it, I think.
Question developing as to whether the hit on Steve Smith, you know, the spear, if you want to call it that, which Cabali's arguing is not a spear.
I don't think it was a spear either.
Timmons hit him with the crown of his helmet in his back on a tackle.
On a tackle. Spearing is usually at the bottom of the pile.
Well, that's what Cabali says. You got to be on the ground for it to be spearing. However, to me, I'm looking at this players in a defenseless posture rule in the NFL rule book, okay?
Oh, no.
It's whether the player is defenseless or not. A receiver attempting to catch a pass or has completed a catch and has not had time to protect himself or has not clearly become a runner. So I'll have to go back and watch this play with Steve Smith, but he gets hit by Blake and Timmons at the same time. And if he's defenseless, there's a rule against lowering the head and making forcible contact with the crown against any part of the defenseless player's body. So, should Timmons be fined for the hit on Steve Smith or suspended or whatever?
Watching the Steelers try to tackle last night infers to me that it's so hard to do, we shouldn't make it any harder on these guys.
Well, Steve Smith's hot about it. He's putting a guy on his hit list. It's not even the right guy.
That's really funny to me. Of course, this is like jag-off on jag-off crime here between Steve Smith and Mike Mitchell.
Well, Mitchell wasn't even in the play. He didn't even make this tackle.
But you know, I believe the last part of what Steve Smith said, that Mike Mitchell said, yeah, how'd you like that? Remember that part of the quote? He said, how'd you like that?
Was that the same play he came over and said
that? It's just so typical Mike Mitchell to come up. Well, you do see it. You see him yap at Steve Smith after Blake and Timmons walk away from the tackle. So it's very Mike Mitchell-esque to
take credit for a tackle.
For a tackle that was deemed to be dirty. Like, only Mike Mitchell would do that.
How'd you like that, baby? That was illegal by our guys. That wasn't me. I don't know. What do you think of this guy? Do you remember that play? Do you remember that the Timmons hit on him?
Ken, my brain is trained to think of the rules the way they were that I watched for 30 years. So, by the letter of what you read, maybe it will be some punishment. But no, I don't watch it and think, ooh, you know, because I'm still kind of old school when I'm watching a game live. To me, the biggest thing about Timmons is he looks like he's back a little bit. I don't know if the toe is bothering him because he led him in tackles and he was a little. He was kind of non-existent, too. You're talking about not noticing Jarvis Jones. The San Francisco game, I don't remember him doing hardly anything.
Yeah, that's a good point, guy.
Shazier.
No, it's true, too.
Well, if they get Shazier back, and Timmons is playing like that, they should have a terrific inside.
Who do the Chargers have this weekend?
They're playing Cleveland. Cleveland, that's right, because there's back-to-back games for the divisional foes. One's at 1 and the other one's at 4. So it's I'll go look it up, but I think it's Kansas City. Is that right? Kansas City versus Cleveland?
Kansas City is Cincinnati.
Kansas City, Cincinnati, then Cleveland against San Diego.
These are the games we've got to pick coming up at noon, by the way. I can tell you guys have done your prep for picking pork.
Did you have a passive-aggressive mother growing up?
What are you talking about?
Like that was you throw these little shots in there, like these dismissive, I can tell you guys did your prep. Like there's sometimes you try to dismiss our efforts.
Like yeah, I do. They're easily dismissed.
I feel like every time you say that, I picture little Ken coming home with a B+ on your spelling bee, and Mom.
I was an all A student, baby. Magna cum laude, Northeastern.
Were you getting spelling tests in Northeastern?
Prom queen at a welding school.
It's an engineering degree compared to your journalism degree, buddy.
I give that to you.
You know what, Ken?
But I'm using my degree.
Some would say I should be using mine.
It's a lot easier to study for those spelling tests at Northeastern when there's no football to distract you.
Hey, there was football then. It just wasn't very good football at that time.
Where'd you guys play? Was there a Husky stadium or something? Where'd you guys play?
Yeah, it was an off-campus stadium. It was It was a field. Parsons Field. Yes.
So this is like the old days, like the old Ivy League, where the fans would show up in their fur coats and drink their scotch and smoke their cigars on the sidelines?
They played URI in New Hampshire, and it was a decent conference.
Like
know, for,
Exposition
for
Park, where the home run was judged by where the fans were standing? That sort of
thing. Parsons Madison. Field reminds me of one that had like a tree right off the end zone, and it's called, you know, the famous oak tree from...
It was fairly embarrassing, yeah. I tell you, we lost the game 77-0 to UMass when I was there. It was one of the worst games I've ever seen. They were down 49-0 at the half.
UMass. Oof.
Dan emails the show. Scobie issues aside, guys, I think Haley just made a moronic call after a moronic call. He didn't run Bell on third down and fourth down twice. Unnecessary pressure on Vic to make passes late. It's ridiculous. If you roll out Vic and give him run-pass options, you give him more chance for success. Haley tries too hard to outthink the room. Also, the nose guard needs to be looked at, in my opinion, after last night's game.
Somebody called the show last night and asked if things would get better with McCullers in there. I don't think so. I haven't seen
him. He was hurt, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He wasn't even active.
He's been inactive the whole season, I believe. And McCullers, to me, is another guy.
Well, McClendon only played 23 snaps. Two at 77. Cam Hayward, 68. So
77.
I don't know how much. Yeah, I don't know how much McClendon's to blame here. They might have just been running on him in, you know, two D-line situations. But their right guard is good, and he showed it last night, right? I mean, the Ravens have one good lineman, and there were times when Yanda, man, he took Tuitt and, like, pushed him back 6 yards at a clip. And I think Tuitt's good, but he's just, you know, this guy Yanda's real good. And they ran behind him in some key spots. Nick in Virginia says, here's how the team lost last night, guys. Vic didn't turn it over, but poor play and three and outs were just as bad. Below average punts didn't help change the field enough. Defense wore down
point.
And became tired. Scobie missed two kicks, which made the coaches insane and had to out-dumb Harbaugh. There's always next week.
No doubt about the kicking game in going the way of the Baltimore Ravens. Not just the place kicker, but until Dre Arch...
Billy Cook. Or
Sam, I think his name is.
Sam Cook, yeah, whatever his name is. Yeah,
yeah, Sam Cook. And aside from Dre Arch's return in overtime...
Don't know
overtime?
Much about history.
Yeah. Dre Arch's return in overtime, there wasn't much to look at positively from the punt game.
Antonio Brown's return, yeah.
No, Dre Archer had one in OT.
Yeah, but Brown had the 40-yard return, which set him up for a chance there.
Yeah.
That was a
Antonio
nice return.
Brown in OT.
Oh, this. All right. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yep.
Oh, that could have been even bigger. He stepped out of bounds. He lost about 12 yards on that.
Yeah, they had two decent returns, and they had three punts that were 40 yards or below from Jordan Berry. Not good. I think the league average is like 47 or something yards per punt. So
it's
that's
just weird watching
average.
This team. Even when Ben and the offense is healthy, it's so different from what we've become used to. You know, the strong defense, the solid kicking, that kind of thing. And you know, whatever offense you got kind of used to be gravy. Now it's like open it up, put the pedal to the floor, and hope the efficiencies you have elsewhere won't bite you in the ass.
This email from Brian T. He says, reliability of the kicker cannot be understated. This loss could very well have derailed an appearance in a Super Bowl. You look back to 05, Jeff Reed hit a 40-yarder to win a game in San Diego, 24-22. If he had missed that, they probably don't even make the playoffs. But getting back to Scobie Dobie don't, if you can't trust him to make a 50-yarder, he must be cut. If I were Tomlin, I would have given him a shot in overtime to redeem himself because he does have a strong leg. It's just the accuracy that's off. And if he makes it, then you keep the kicker and he ends up being a hero. If he misses it, then he's done for sure. It's an interesting way to look at it.
Have you guys been aware of the Ben Roethlisberger cell phone controversy on
no.
the sideline? From Pro Football Talk, in the post-Deflategate NFL, Patriots fans are looking for any and all evidence of other teams breaking the rules. On Thursday night, they thought they'd found some. The CBS broadcast of the Ravens-Steelers game showed quarterback Ben Roethlisberger using what some thought was a smartphone. According to the Steelers, it wasn't. Team spokesperson Bert Lawton tells Pro Football Talk that Roethlisberger was consulting his black plastic wristband that contains the play calls for the game. Roethlisberger kept the wristband in his sweatshirt, removing the device throughout the game to examine it. The explanation meshes with the images from the game. Besides, with the use of cell phones prohibited on the NFL sidelines during games, even if they're being used solely to block people on Twitter, common sense suggests that no one will be using one so blatantly and obviously during the game. If any team understands this, it's the Steelers. 4 years ago, Troy Polamalu was fined $10,000 for using a cell phone during a game. Remember that he called his wife to say, I'm not dead.
With the concussion.
The fine was overturned on appeal based on the explanation that Polamalu, who had left the game with concussion-like symptoms, was simply calling his wife to tell her that he was okay. So, anal Patriot fans at it again. Continuing to be jag-offs.
Troy calling his wife was awesome. You remember that game?
Yeah.
He's on the sideline. I guess they could.
I'm okay. Eggs and bread. Yeah, how about milk? Okay, yeah.
No Gatorade.
I also love the sports pickle that show when they scored the first touchdown. Ben had his hands up in the air on the sidelines, like, "Yeah, we scored the touchdown!" And they had the headline like, "More painkillers!" Yeah,
back God, to painkillers. He looked bad in that photo.
Yeah, he didn't look real good.
Hey, speaking of Troy, and a serious note for a second, did I hear that his brother or brother-in-law is a professor at that community college where the shooting happened in Oregon yesterday?
Oh, no shit.
Right? Some relative of Polamalu's. I mean, he wasn't one of the ones that was shot, but he was.
Well, yeah, he's from up there. Remember, he was from up there before he went down to California.
I think it's his brother.
Yeah. Thanks for the email from Brian. John emails, Jeff Reed is now openly campaigning for the Steelers to bring him back, guys. Did you check his Twitter feed? Let's keep this simple. Bring me back Pittsburgh. Should we bring Skippy back to the Berg? John and Desperate.
Skippy the kicker.
You gave him that name, didn't you? Didn't you, Tim?
No, he hated that so much.
Eddie Crow's the first one I heard him call him Skippy.
Oh, that came from a caller to my show at night when I was still on at night at 12:50. It was a guy who claimed that he went to Carolina with Jeff, and everybody called him Skippy. And
you kept playing that kangaroo song.
Yeah, Skippy the kangaroo, right. And Jeff, I think it was true, but he said that it wasn't because it started to catch on, and then Eddie picked it up. Yeah, Eddie picked it up and turned into something even bigger after that. So I do think there was some truth to it. He just never owned up to it because he didn't like it. But, yeah, I would love to see the return of Skippy the Kangaroo. Can you do the Skippy the Kangaroo song, Ken?
No, I can't.
Skippy the Kangaroo. Look it up, Josh. See if we can find it.
I think you got it down, Tim. I'm just going to give you this one.
There's a lot of falsetto in that, though. I can't make the notes go that high.
Brian M. emails, Hayward Bay, 4 catches, guys. Miller and Wheaton, 1 each. Can you please explain why? And why was Coates playing? And why would you throw to him on top of that? Well, Wheaton was hurt at some point.
Wheaton hurt his ankle and came out of the game. That's why Coates was in. And I don't mind. Bay has been playing pretty well. You know, if no one else is catching the passes or Bay is dropping them, then you ask the question. I don't think that was an easy touchdown catch. Even would you find Skippy the Kangaroo?
Skippy the Kangaroo.
Oh, God.
We're on. We've lost control of the internet. I'm glad. This is exhaustion giddiness is what this is. Yeah. I think all 4 of us have had a combined 8 hours sleep.
Paulie tweets me, so Big Ben uses his cell phone on the sideline and lies about it. 7-month investigation coming. Maybe the Supreme Court is going to be in on this one, so I'm just going to tweet back to him. Yeah. So he should have had his henchman crunch it and throw it away like your guy, right?
Yeah, that was Big Ben using a cell phone on the sideline. He will destroy it now.
Stepped on it this morning, which is what he normally does after a game.
He was texting Giselle.
Beavis emails. The Steelers really missed Shazier against the run last night, guys. They were blocking Timmons and leaving Spence unblocked. He couldn't make tackles on runs up the middle. That could be true. Spence showed up big time on a couple plays, but I don't know how he did against the run. Maybe he was a problem. That's a good point by Beavis. That's the saving fake punt play was awesome. I don't know how he managed to read that play.
That, he had his own sack. He was in on Harrison's sack. I thought he did a lot of good things.
Scott emails. He says, I think Steve Smith is just a fake tough guy, guys. Timmons injured his ankle early. He did nothing. Then Timmons crushed him again, so he calls out Mitchell. He's not challenging Timmons. Fake tough guy. Maybe he's afraid of Timmons. I don't know. Maybe he's just out of his mind. Many hits since he's taken his career. Lou is out in SoCal, of course. He says, I've lived 66 years, guys. It took me this long to see my most disappointing games, Monday and Thursday combined. Oh, that's pretty hard to believe. Anyway, Lou says, coaching gets an F minus, 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 minus. Never seen anything like it. Vic left-handed throwing across his body on a critical play. I thought Pete Carroll was coaching and released Scooby-Doo today, if not sooner. Le'Veon Bell, the best runner in the game, and on critical downs, they didn't use him. Most of our emailers agreeing with you, Guy, that that's their biggest takeaway is more Le'Veon Bell when it counted. I think you've gotten more support than I have for my bitching about the late fourth quarter situation when they ran Le'Veon into the ground, into the line at third and four, and just let Scobie kick the 40-yarder.
Yeah, I'm more, I mean, I'm more they need to run, not throw on that fourth down, whether it's Le'Veon or anybody, even if I didn't mind the sweep or whatever that was that Vic ran on the first possession, because, I mean, I think he made some things happen with his legs in the game, and it's a fairly safe play, but he didn't get the blocking that he needed. I just don't like a guy that, you know, not that he had a bad night passing. His percentage of completions were great, but so much short stuff. And he did have a couple of really bad passes. As Tim said, first pass of the game, last pass of the game. But he also had another one that was almost picked that he bounced in. I'm trying to remember. I think that was in the fourth quarter. It's just too risky. It's too shaky. They don't have 100 yards passing in the entire game going into the overtime, and that's what you want to do when you need a couple yards. It doesn't make sense to me.
Ed emails, he says, it's been a disappointing week, painful game last night. Steelers really had to work to lose that one. I'm coming away with a warm feeling for the defense, though, and if they can stay healthy until Ben gets back, still like our chances to win the division. Also thought the pass Antonio Brown missed was tipped at the last second in the end zone. I'm not sure if that's true, though, Ed. Did you guys see that?
Looking at the replay, I don't think it was tipped. There was a hand there, but I thought the one that Haywood Bay caught might have had a finger on it and changed the spin a little bit. But watching the replays of both, I think both got to the receiver untouched.
Yeah. Ed says, P.S. Snoop Dogg should do all post-game interviews for Tomlin in his place. That would be good. Pat Neltuna says, you guys were talking about Jarvis Jones being persona non grata last night during the game. Speaking of such players, I wonder if any Steeler third-round pick has contributed less than Dree Archer has in his first 20 games. That pick could have been used on a cornerback who might be starting right now or a nose tackle. Especially the latter, when a bona fide player of pedigree could have helped prevent Forsett from gouging them last night. Instead, they got a scatback type who can't get on the field other than to watch kickoff sail over his head in the end zone more often than not. Nobody's going to disagree with that one, I don't think.
No, I don't think so. But I think part of any criticism personnel-wise right now, you have to look at the injuries that they have, too, on offense. I mean, it's if you want to criticize losing a kicker when you don't have a second one on your roster in the preseason, the criticism should be not having the second one on your roster. I know a lot of people think that Sweesum should not have tried to make that. That's why Sweesum plays. I mean, in Pittsburgh, that kind of thing should go over big, that the kicker's willing to get his face dirty. That wasn't – now, do you back off in a preseason because it's a preseason game? Sure, that sounds like a smarter thing to do now. But he gets his nose in there on plays in regular season games. That's the way he plays. Losing your Pro Bowl center, losing a valuable receiver to a suspension, a running back to a suspension, a quarterback to an injury. I mean, it's a mess. And if you're going to survive all those kinds of injuries and with a defense that's trying to rebuild itself as well, you almost have to draft perfectly. I mean, you go up and down any team, and I'm not giving them a hall pass. I think they've made a far more bad personnel decisions than good ones in recent years, especially since Tomlin became the head coach. I mean, to me, the dividing line is in there. But at the same time, you know, no team drafts seven perfect guys every year that fit some hole that they need. And every team in the league at some point, like, boy, if they wouldn't have taken this guy. Oh, if they'd have taken a cornerback, they wouldn't be in this. You know,
right.
That's the way it works.
Email from Chuck in Bethel Park. He says, Jarvis Jones is still bad, but did you guys notice all the runs were to the right side last night? By Baltimore, he's talking about, obviously.
I didn't notice that.
I think that may be true, but maybe more Yonda related.
Yeah.
If that's accurate, than running away from Jarvis or towards Dupree.
And a lot of the time, that's where Timmons was. We were just talking about him, so it's not like they were choosing, you know, which side inside linebacker-wise to go after.
Right. Let's take one more here from Cam Hayward. Justin says, believe it or not, guys, my family is blaming me for the Steelers and Pirates woes. I decided to move back home from Orlando since I've done all this wonderful stuff has happened. So blame me. I'm the one who can't kick, hit, or coach. Glad to be back home on the north side, maybe at the wrong time. Justin, formerly from Orlando.
I have a good one of my best friends growing up. We had a paper route together and everything. He's lived in Florida for a while now. But he came home for a week, and his son came to the game last night, 28. He went to the Penguin game Wednesday night, went to the Steeler game last night. The Penguins lost 7-2. They lost that game. Thank God you guys are going back to Florida and you're not going to any of the Pirates-Reds games this weekend.
Oh, man. What a brutal week.
That's
huh?
That's exactly. By the way, you don't have to go back far at all to look at other disastrous third-round picks. How about Curtis Brown in 2011?
Ugh.
How about Craig Erbick in 2009? How about Bruce Davis in 2008?
Oh,
Bruce Davis is bad.
How about Willie Reed in 2006? Their third-round picks suck.
Hey, Bruce Davis has made a fine career with those CopperFit commercials, I'll have you know.
Hey, Sammy Coates had a catch last night. Lay off.
Well, the jury's out on him.
Here's Cameron Hayward, who is one of the leaders of this team, one of their emotional spokespeople. If that's a word, which probably not. Cam talking last night, obviously frustrated trying to play the company line and talk about what happened and what didn't.
It's on us, you know. We got to execute better, you know, offense, defense, and special teams. You know, the coaches just call the plays. We got to execute them. So, you know, for us to point the finger at the coaches, you know, a stupid idea. You know, we got to take full responsibility for what we're doing out there. So many big stops, but, you know, we needed one more. You know, that's the way it falls sometimes. You know, we talk about not having any control of how we're going to start on the field, but how we end up on the field. So, you know, whenever there's extra plays, there's always opportunities for us to execute and get the ball back for offense.
Ross had a big first half. What do you think his play, especially in the early goings?
Yeah, you know, he's a young guy, and, you know, to be getting reps this early, it's critical. You know, I thought he did some good things, and, you know, I know he's going to try to get better and become a better player.
Hayward had the forced fumble, which led to the Cockrell, which was really it was an unbelievable play at the sideline to pull that in and the awareness to be over there. They had some terrific plays on a night. All you're going to remember is Scobie or the coaches and their mismanagement of it. Noon hour to come here, the Four Horsemen Hour. Josh Taylor will join us. He was in the locker room last night. We'll all pick pork, two college games and a couple of pro games as well. Oh, one pro game. As we'll pick the Bengals and Chiefs game. That's on the way next, all brought to you by Giovanni's Pizza, and we are brought to you by Duffy's Beer all day long here on the morning show on Trib Live Radio.
Duffy's Beer and much more in Pleasant Hills. 412-653-BEER. See all of our weekly specials at duffysbeer.com. And get your pumpkin and Oktoberfest beers before they're gone. Your South Hills headquarters for beer, pop, snacks, vapes, home brewing supplies, and all your party and tailgating needs for this week's game. Duffy's Beer and much more in Pleasant Hills and online at duffysbeer.com.
The Four Horsemen of Trib Live Radio.
Anytime you see the Four Horsemen together, it's something special.
Ken Laird, Guy Chunker, Tim Benz, Josh Taylor.
Jump on the horseman one time, baby. It's an all-night
the apocalypse for Sports Talk Radio is here.
This was a Sports Apocalypse week. Josh Taylor joined the Bitch Fest. What was the biggest takeaway you had last night watching this one from Heinz Field up in your press box perch?
You mean I only get one?
Yes.
The one I have is that you and I were on a great path here. 20-7 lead. What was it? Four fourth down stops. I'm like, this game is sewed up. They had the ball. Let me go back to my chart here. They had the ball with a first and 10 with 2:04 left on Baltimore's 29-yard line with a three-point lead.
And lost the game.
And could not put the game away. That's it. Don't anything else after that need not be discussed. You were on the plus side of the field. You're 9 yards from the red zone with the two-minute warning and they had one timeout left, and you could not put the game away.
And Flacco took a terrible sack.
And he took a bad sack. This game, for all intents and purposes, should have been over, and they didn't put it away.
And they put time back on the clock, which ended up being a huge – I'm not saying they were wrong to do so, but that's big.
It played a factor because it gave Baltimore another stoppage of the clock. But at the same time, Baltimore's down to their last timeout. You got two stoppages left in the game with 2 minutes, and you can't salt this game away.
Well, that's why I had the biggest problem with that sequence. You know, you got to get a first down there. They didn't do it. They ran it three times with Le'Veon and settled for Scobie, who you know is bad. You've known all along he's bad.
Well, at the same time, do you throw it in that situation?
I roll Vic out on the third down, knowing you need to keep inbounds, and you only throw it if the pass is there. If he's got to just head to the line of scrimmage and dive, that's fine. Then you take Scobie and you try it.
Well, they tried to throw it on a third down in overtime, and they tried to throw it to Brown on a slant. I guess Vic thought better of it because there was a linebacker there in the middle of the field where Brown would have been had Vic thrown the ball accurately, but he threw it behind him, and it almost got picked. So it's – I'm trying to figure out because I can't – the only thing I can explain it to be is that maybe the scaling down of the playbook so much limited their options because they ran so many short yardage plays, and you saw so many of the same ones being running in the second half. That play action where Vic dumps it off to the running back that got maybe a yard a pop if he completed it, we saw that, what, five times? And it worked all of twice? And both times it worked, they got a yard, maybe two. They ran out of so many. I think they ran so many short yardage plays, or they ran the few that they had so many times that they ran out, that they almost didn't have as many options to use when it came down to getting critical yards and short yardage plays in the fourth quarter and overtime. I really do believe that. And that I blame on the coaching staff, because if you pare your playbook down that far to where you only have so many short yardage plays that you have used them so much that you've exhausted them, that's a preparation problem.
You know, it's a worst case scenario with the injury happening on the road and the short week to get ready. But Michael Vick's thrown over 3,000 NFL passes. I think it was his 113th career start last night. There are a few backup quarterbacks in the league who come in with that kind of experience.
And had he won, it would have been his 60th win.
Well, you know, and to boot it all, though, I expected him to lose. I picked against him. But when it's 20-7 early in the third quarter, they have it all going. And I didn't even think of it in the terms that you presented. The ball on their 29-yard line, 2 minutes to go, 3-point lead, and they still find a way to screw it up.
How do you drop that?
Yeah.
That's a tap in by golf standards. That's a tap in from 3 feet. And they couldn't do it.
Tim's right. That may be the most winnable game they have while Roethlisberger's out. They may not win a game while he's out. And then again, he could get a week and a half of practice, be totally that much more comfortable, and go beat a San Diego team that I don't really think so. I'm anxious to watch San Diego this weekend. They're 1-2, I think, right?
Chargers. Yeah, you might be right. And to Tim's point, Tim was right. They score that touchdown and go up 20-7 off of a turnover, no less. And they give up a three-yard pass to Juszczyk on the first play. Second play, four set, 33 yards. That sets them up to tie the game. Or not tie the game, but to score that touchdown and put them right back in it. They had their foot on their throat in the third quarter. They had them ready to go. That might be the one thing that the defense didn't do that I can point to and say that's where the defense messed up. Other than that, I have no complaints about the defense. They stopped this team over and over again. How many times did Baltimore go for it on fourth down? And how many times did they stop them over and over again, especially in the second half?
Three times in the second half.
The failed field goal, the sack on Flacco. They did everything they could to keep themselves in this game. The offensive game planning and the coaching in the fourth quarter and overtime is what screwed them over. And that, oh yeah, and the kicker missing two field goals, there's that thing too.
Oh yeah, by the way.
Two chances in what, 5 minutes? Two chances to make it a two-possession game or more, and you blow it twice in 5 minutes?
Does anybody give him a hall pass on a 49-yarder at all? I mean, that's not automatic. The 41, you can't then come back and miss the 41-yarder.
I would give him the 49-yarder, but not the 41. It was right. That close.
Well, I agree with that. My only argument then is, okay, so he makes that, they're up. There's still no guarantee
right.
That they keep them from driving down the field and beating you by a point.
That's true, but I mean, that game doesn't go in overtime.
That changes what Baltimore's trying to do offensively if they're down six.
But based on what the defense had been doing up to that point,
they probably
I take that gamble. I'm taking that gamble.
Oh, I would too. But I'm just saying, everybody thinks it's just an automatic. If he makes some of those field goals, they win. That's not necessarily true either.
I agree with that. But at the same time, the way that defense is playing, I have no problem with them trying to defend a six-point lead.
And
because
with,
and odds are, if you make that field goal, you're going to kick it off. And Scobie had been kicking touchbacks most of the night, or at least close to them, deep into the end zone. So you're probably starting Baltimore from their 20-yard line. So they got to go 80 yards just to catch you.
And without Steve Smith.
And without Steve Smith. I'll take those odds.
And not being able to run with Forsett.
I'm taking those odds every time.
That's true, because when they missed field goal, then they started from, the 31? On that final tying drive with a minute to go.
Yeah, they started first and 10 with a minute and 1 second left. Minute and 1 second to go on their own 31.
So it's a 10-yard swing. Yeah, I credit the defense for not buckling after the first miss. And even in overtime on the game-winning field goal, I thought, they're just going to wilt and let them go right down and maybe score a touchdown to ice it.
Yeah, the fact that they made them kick
a 50-yarder to
the
win
fact
it.
That they made the 52-yarder just to win the game is a win.
I was really thinking, I wasn't 100% sure he was going to kick that because of the distance, and I'm looking at the time left. I'm thinking if he misses that, there's a real chance this ends in a tie, the way both teams had been not moving the ball. And I mean, the Steelers
it deserved to be a tie, didn't it?
Yeah, it kind of did.
It was to the point where people on Twitter were rooting for a tie, just so end.
I thought Bettman would come out and get 3-on-3 overtime. He started at some point there.
I thought Bud Seeling was going to stop the game because they ran out of relief pitchers. Unbelievable.
Yeah, and speaking of Seeling, by the way, there was some talk yesterday that they're trying to limit relief pitchers next year in baseball. Did you guys catch that rule at all?
They limit how?
Like so many switches per game, to try to pace a play.
They're
not happy that they've only shaved 5 minutes off. This is actually a proposal.
Oh no, don't do it.
That won't happen.
Get ready for that talk.
Buried story yesterday. I don't know if you guys saw this, but Steve Kerr is going to be out with back surgery for the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah.
So I guess that means that Clint Hurdle is going to have to miss this Cincinnati Reds series. Substitution patterns and all.
Now that happened last year.
He's going to take care of himself.
That should have happened last year when he had the bad hip.
Well, see, that's the problem.
That would have been the time to do it.
They didn't employ the Golden State substitution patterns.
They didn't use the strategy. Yeah.
And look what happened. Now he's fine, see?
You hate the Golden State Warrior plan.
I really do. I think
you really despise it.
Such a stupid apples to banana comparison.
Hey, by the way, Wrigley Field is still a possibility, as we all know. There is a group of Cubs fans that have started a GoFundMe page to try to send Steve Bartman to the wild card game, whether it's in Pittsburgh or at Wrigley Field.
Oh, my God.
They're looking to raise $5,000. And it reads, lifelong Cubs fans want to make amends for 2003. Let's make it happen. First, we need to find him to get him to the big game. If anybody knows where he's at, tell him we're looking for him. Our money would pay for his expenses, ticket, hotel room, flights, and a little spending money. If he cannot be found by the time of the big game, all proceeds will be donated to the Alzheimer's Association. Anyway, I don't know if that's a tie-in at all. But could you see Steve Bartman sitting at PNC Park next Wednesday?
That depends. Does this help or hurt your theory that the GOAT curse will mess up the Cubs?
I don't know.
Because if Bartman's there, I can see Ken like standing outside the gate waiting for him with like a pit bull and a shotgun.
It's
trying
like a
to deny
the
Bartman
stream
entry.
Sort of thing.
You're didn't not you allowed say, in.
Didn't you say Steve Bartman was bad?
Hey, I'll tell you what, all seriousness. Arrieta's pitching tonight. The Pirates better win this game tonight because if they lose and Arrieta wins – and now they're down to two games and still need to win them. They would have to win them both, depending on what the Cubs do. It's going to be – and I just think mentally, if they have to go to Wrigley – I don't know that Wrigley Field is a disadvantage. It might even be an advantage, especially with Arrieta's record and with the pressure maybe that the Cubs might feel, a young, inexperienced playoff team like the Cubs in front of their own fans. I think the mental letdown that the Pirates would have not only failed to clinch the division but allowed the Cubs to catch them, this would be a really bad vibe going into that game.
Is this a good time to point out that I mentioned this would be a problem in June, or should we just let that go? Anyway, from Guy's standpoint about Wrigley Field, this is the one thing where I think the Pirates have an advantage, because two things. You talked about this before, Guy. Arrieta actually pitches better on the road than he does at home. Plus, Gerrit Cole in his career versus the Cubs is better at Wrigley Field than he is at PNC Park.
Well, the Reds are under 400. They've lost 12 games in a row. If they win, they better not win more than one game here this weekend.
They have to sweep this series.
Take
the first two and put it away. If you lose the last one.
Which game is Burnett pitching?
The second one. He's Saturday.
All right, so
Liriano tonight. Burnett tomorrow,
half Sunday. I like their chances to win at least two.
Yeah. If you take these first two and put it away, you're done. Just do that and get it over with. If you win the first two and clinch home field and lose Sunday, I don't care.
They
take those first
99 wins.
They don't celebrate champagne style for this, do they? If they lock up two more for a home
field?
No.
Uh-uh.
No.
All right. Sean in Canada. Canada, we got a first Canadian emailer of the day.
Good night, Canada.
Sean says, whatever happened to putting players in the best position for opportunities to succeed, guys? Coaching staff did not game plan to work to Vic's strengths, and the lack of plays to Heath Miller was plain and simple dumbfounding.
I said that earlier today. I agree completely.
I talked to Mike Graw during the Mike and Dave's pregame show last night before the game, and the one thing I mentioned was, if you remember when Vic played in Atlanta, one of his best options he had was Algie Crumpler. He made the most of having a guy like Crumpler in the middle of the field, because if you're a quarterback that's mobile, the best thing you could have is a reliable tight end, because it takes up the middle of the field and it forces defenses to choose whether you're going to throw to your tight end or whether you're going to run. And the one thing Vic did not do last night was use his tight end. I was very surprised that did not happen.
Sean also says Scobie's got to be a Jagoff of the Year candidate. He has got to go. Mm. Patty's one of our best emailers. Her use of capitalization in emails is great. Patty says, I read before the game this was going to be Vic's biggest challenge. This was Tomlin's biggest challenge. He is now, has to win without a quarterback and without a kicker, bad draft picks, and time management. You can hear the rage coming through the email with Patty. At least I can.
I'm still hung up with the time management at the end of the second quarter, let alone the second half and overtime.
Indeed. Indeed.
Why don't you take one shot at the end zone there?
Yeah, I feel like that was Vic-related. They were, at that point, still had lobotomized the playbook for him, right?
Well, they tried it in the drive before going to the end zone, and Brown dropped it, so why not try it again?
That's true, and that was a beautiful pass.
It was a great pass. It was a great throw for all things considered. And usually, up until this point, as much credit as we've given Antonio Brown, on any other night, Antonio Brown catches that ball. We can't look past it.
Harry's in New Jersey. Mailman listener. I've seen what most of you guys look like, but I've never seen Taylor. I picture him looking like Jonah Hill. Am I close?
No.
If not, who would you say Josh looks like? Just wondering. Harry in Jersey. You're close. I think you're close.
Jonah
Harry.
Hill.
Jonah Hill. Really?
Trying to picture Jonah Hill African American, and I just can't come up with an analogy. I'm doing my best.
Although I wish I did have his Richard Pryor shirt from Superbad. That's a sweet shirt. That is a sweet-ass T-shirt. That shirt I want. That might be the only thing about Jonah Hill that I do like is that T-shirt.
Jim in New Bedford. I can't believe Kabbali is saying the Steelers will not release Scobie because of money. Didn't the NFL just give the Rooneys $245 million? Aren't they making millions through ticket sales at the Steelers shop? I can't believe it. I would have cut this guy last night.
Do we have to make this obligatory reminder that there is a salary cap, or would that be rude?
That'd be rude to Jim. Let's just let that go.
Okay, just checking.
Let's see. Brian says, this just in, Scobie missed again. Thank you, Brian.
He went home to kick the dog. The dog is still safe.
He missed the dog.
We got a Cam Thomas needs to go, too. He got gashed every time he was in. He only played 14 snaps. I was looking
at
him.
He made one play. I noticed him making one play.
Hashtag emails from 2014.
And that's Jarvis Jones territory.
Yeah. Will this game be remembered weeks from now? Is the Scobie game or the coaches blew it game?
No, the Scobie game.
It'll be the Scobie game.
Here's what will happen. If the Steelers go on to win the division or make the playoffs, it'll be remembered, but, as an aside. If the Steelers go on to win 6 games this year, go 6-10, it'll be largely forgotten. And if the Steelers miss the playoffs by a game or two, it'll be remembered forever.
Yeah, it
depends on what happens the rest of the way.
It's the Scobie game for me, because if Scobie makes one of those two, you're not talking about how the coaches blew it.
Was the Patriots game was not Scobie. People don't remember that from the Pats game, though, even though he missed two in that one.
Not entirely
they
Scobie,
were big.
But
you get the feeling if he made those early field goals, that game's not 28-14 late. It's probably 38-20.
It's probably 14-13 at halftime if you count those two field goals and the drop touchdown by Hayward Bay. So 14-13 game.
The number of tweets to Jeff Reed at his Twitter site are just incredible.
I'm
being honest
here.
Does anybody know, is he working? Is he doing anything?
He's doing radio.
He's doing radio in North Carolina.
Oh.
Yeah.
He's talking NASCAR.
Oh, my God.
At the real Jeff Reed. You got anything planned for, like, the next 16 weeks? Please come back. I mean, just, like, hundreds and hundreds of at the real Jeff Reed
Until he comes back and tries to tackle somebody on special teams, and then the entire postgame show is hijacked by people that want to criticize his tackling technique.
I don't know. The one thing that Jeff Reed had going for him is that he was terrible at tackling people. Maybe that's why he stayed healthy for so long. That actually worked for him in hindsight.
Well, that is ironic given the situation with Sweezy, isn't
it? Exactly.
All right.
Did you hear the woman that tried to blame Barry for holding the ball wrong in the postgame show last night?
Yes. Oh, God.
Yeah.
What? There's enough to blame Jordan Berry for.
How are you supposed to hold a ball when you're the punter and the kicker comes up to kick it?
And Adam and I just looked at each other and at the same time said, "Laces out!"
That was Ray Finkel's mom.
Yeah, that's it was, probably was.
Wasn't it you, Ken, that tweeted "Laces out" later on?
No.
Wasn't you? Whoever did, it was hilarious, but still.
Time for Pick and Pork. And we have to mention, Guy Junker is 15-5 against the spread out of the gate this year with last night's win. Taylor drops out of a share for first place.
For now.
14-6 now.
For now.
Heavy is the head that wears the crown.
15-5, guy. That is impressive.
Is that why you always have to fix your hair?
No, it's
you always said you started slow. This is a white-hot start for you. This makes you dangerous.
You already know that Invisible Fence brand creates happier homes where pets can safely play in the yard out of danger. But did you know we also have products to help your pets avoid bad behaviors with trash cans, furniture, and unsafe areas both inside and out? We even offer a programmable pet door for more pet freedom. And expert installation plus professional pet training guarantee success. To schedule a free in-home consultation, visit InvisibleFence.com or call 1-800-578-3647.
This season, you have a choice. You can get sold or you can get paid. The sports handicapping business has turned into a sales pitch rather than picking winning games. But there is still a company that stands out from this crowd, TomBartonSports.com. While the rest sit in a boiler room atmosphere, cold calling clients and praying on that next sale, TomBartonSports.com is busy winning games. TomBartonSports.com is less than $100 for 30 days of plays and simply the best in the business. Other fast-talking types might make that claim, but TomBartonSports.com has the awards and the evidence to back it up. TomBartonSports.com is monitored and documented, so you know it's the truth. So this year, instead of being the guy who got sold by a wannabe handicapper who's really just a salesman, come to TomBartonSports.com and be the guy who gets paid week in and week out by a real professional, because you choose the best in the business.
TomBartonSports.com is an informational site only and does not accept wagers.
Brings a tear back. A little tear rolling down my cheek here. Back to the good old days where Ken was my producer and we were up until 9 o'clock at night every night talking
was about
the
Skippy
Pirates.
Song?
That was the Skippy song. You couldn't hear it?
I couldn't hear it, no.
God. Oh, Ken, I feel sorry for you now. I'll just email it to you.
I'll dial it up later. Oh, there it goes.
No, that's the other one. That was the one where he took on the tiger. Have you ever seen the one where Skippy the Bush Kangaroo walks the horses?
Yeah. No. There's so many clips on here. It's actually
Skippy
pretty ridiculous.
Skippy the Bush Kangaroo was a really multifaceted animal. I wonder if Skippy is still with us. How long does a kangaroo live?
This is an Australian TV show, by the way. The people have no idea what we're talking about.
1966 was its first episode.
The phone call that said that Jeff Reed should be named Skippy apparently started because there was a fraternity at the University of North Carolina that said he had a little skip after he made every field goal. Uh-huh. He would kick a field goal and have a little skip in his step, so everybody called him Skippy, and that's where it started from. And in a moment of clarity, Jeff Reed acknowledged that this was a thing and then publicly dismissed it.
Okay.
And then forgot that he acknowledged it to me.
He
wanted no part of it. He wanted distance. Why do you have to bring up that Skippy thing all the time? He asked me.
Well, he was on Brand X this morning, and Ryan, our emailer, says, I can't make this up. Reed says he's working 6 days and 72 hours a week at a large regional car dealership in the southeast. So apparently that's what Jeff Reed's doing
that's
now.
That's true, yes. And he is also doing some radio on the side, or at least he was.
I don't think they'll bring him in, but actually if they brought him in for a tryout, it wouldn't be the dumbest thing to ever do. If you're going to bring in Jay Feely, this guy actually had a knack for kicking at Heinz Field, or the guy you currently have does not have a knack for it. And Swisham had it, whatever it is to kick in that building. It's unpredictable to find the guy that can do it, and this guy could do it for a little while.
But two things are different. Number one, the stadium is different now, so the wind currents are different. And number two, there are a lot more bars on the north side than when you left.
Purgatory's on red alert.
Right.
Just keep him out of the north side.
Well, he plays there. I mean, that was part of the problem, right? Wasn't the whole Matt Spaeth incident with him, was that after a Thursday night game?
That's true.
Baltimore?
He did enough damage on the north side. Good God.
Landon Donovan has thrown his hat in the ring.
Oh, good.
The soccer player.
You're serious? Or
somebody tweeted at him that the Steelers need a kicker. He goes, I'm in if they call.
Megan Klingenberg in, too? It's Rossi's girl.
Also interesting, did I get this tweet out there? Did this make it? What's wrong here? I think I tried to send out a tweet. I'm going to have to retweet it again. But from Pro Football Focus, they say that Antonio Brown's season has likely already hit a peak because Martavis Bryant's coming back. And they're saying that, I don't know, Pro Football Focus, of all people, I think would get away from the fantasy aspect of this. From a fantasy standpoint, but, I mean, weren't his numbers just as good, if not better, when Martavis got in the mix, or did his numbers
Yeah, they were.
Yeah, didn't really change much.
But if you're talking about quality of snaps and what he does proficiently, then like that's what they're supposed to do, right? Not just look at the raw numbers, look at the overall picture, the whole look of the play. Am I right on that? That's their thing. So
the only thing I can really use as an example as to why they might be on to something is because of what Baltimore did last night. Baltimore, they use a lot of safety over the top. At least that's what these guys are saying. And I think that dissuaded Vic from taking that chance. Maybe Ben takes that chance better with Brown because he knows where to put the ball for Brown to beat those guys. Maybe Vic isn't as good at it as Ben is. So they might be on to something. But I don't know. That might be the only thing I can see actually going in that direction. Other than that, I don't entirely agree with it.
Well, I'm looking at Pro Football Focus. Their ratings of Antonio week by week last year. He had his best games against Indy and Houston in weeks 7 and 8, and Bryant played in those games.
Right.
He also graded very highly against Tennessee, the Bengals late in the year, Atlanta. So he played well with Bryant alongside last year. Now, yesterday, not so much, but Brian will be back for the San Diego game, we assume, although I guess that's not a done deal. I mean, he's got to prove himself again with the team, right? I mean, they're not going to just put him back out on there if he doesn't produce and basically restarts training camp all over after 3 weeks in rehab. We'll have a full week to talk about that next week. Mike in Chi-Town emails, what in the suck is wrong with Phil Sims? Aren't all punts moving? Why do he and Nance hate the Steelers so much?
No one knows what's wrong with Phil Sims.
Every national broadcaster hates the Steelers. Every single one. It's funny how they only hate the Steelers in games that they lose, though. Have you noticed that? Except Collinsworth, who allegedly hates them all the time.
It's for me, it's not even about Phil Sims hating the Steelers. It's about Phil Sims not know. Phil Sims is like the Bill Walton of NFL football. No one knows what the hell Phil Sims is talking about.
No, but I understand Walton. Like he speaks to me on a Bob Dylan level.
Yeah, at least
Sims, I just don't.
At least when Walton goes on tangents about Bob Dylan and the Rolling Stones or and the Grateful Dead, at least you know it has a purpose. Phil Sims, we don't know what his purpose is. None.
We in Pursuit were at a Bears, the Steelers Bears game a few years ago, Tim, and it was like a 4 o'clock game, and Sims was there, and he was watching the 1 o'clock games with us, and it was pretty cool for a while, you know, because you think, oh, you're watching a game with Phil Sims. By the end of it, Pursuit and I kept looking at each other. He was just, like, interrupting conversation. He'd be, like, pointing out things in these games that we weren't, like, asking about. And like, it just got to be uncomfortable, awkward, and annoying. It was like, okay, Phil, go call the game. Steelers are coming up at 4.
He became that guy in the bar?
Yeah, he's like that guy in the bar that just won't stop talking and wants a part of every conversation. He's a very strange guy.
Do you guys follow Phil Sims' quotes on Twitter? Because I do. Basically, they watch games that Phil Sims works, and they actually tweet out the things that he says. This is something from Sunday. It says, quote, I'd go for it here. 30 seconds later, Jim, this is a great call not going for it in punting. This is Phil Sims at its finest, but you just see so many great Phil Sims quotes of things that make absolutely no sense. And that's all they do is just tweet out the stuff that he says that contradicts itself. It's fantastic. I love it. I highly recommend it.
Well, Mike Tomlin, I don't know if he contradicts himself, but he typically is short and brief in these post-game press conferences. Some of your New England guys, Tim, were saying he was going to blame the headsets again after last night's loss. Typical. I don't think he did that. Let's see what Tomlin did say.
It's always about them, Ken. It's always about them.
23-20, the loss in overtime, a tough one for a coach to take. He's taking heat. Haley's taking heat. What did Tomlin say about it after last night's performance?
Disappointing outcome of a really good game. You know, two teams battling there. They made a few more plays than we did. We take responsibility for that. It's painful tonight, but this game's not going to define us. Hopefully, it's a building block for us as we move forward. We got some things to learn from it. Appreciate the efforts of the men. Just came up short, and we all are responsible for that, starting with me. You know, injuries, Marcus Wheaton had an ankle. Other than that, just bumps and bruises associated with playing. We'll evaluate the game and the injuries, obviously, tomorrow. Have more information for you as we move forward. Questions?
Will you explore the possibility of a new kicker?
You know, we got to turn the stones over. We got to find ways to win games. Obviously, that's an element of it. It was an element of the outcome tonight.
Coach, play calling at the end of the game, lay down back, fresh, fourth and two, third and fourth down. Don't give him the ball. Any thoughts on
that? Hey, when you lose, man, you open to criticism, and we lost. So I'm not going to try to justify anything that we did. Anything we did, I take responsibility for.
Did Baltimore do something extra to take AB out of the game?
You know, when you got guys like that, you know, they work to minimize them just like we work to minimize Steve Smith. Defenses were fighting. That's just an element of competition.
What did you see in the way Michael ran the offense?
You know, I thought it was some good things. You know, it needs to be a building block as we move forward, but obviously it wasn't enough tonight. And, you know, that's our single little focus. We're not looking for comfort or be able to define performances. We're just trying to do what's required to win football games, and we didn't do that tonight.
What was the conversation, if any, about taking the
football game? Not a lot of conversation. I made that decision.
And there was some comment on the broadcast, but I suppose I'm not to believe anything that Jim Nantz or Phil Simms say. But there was some comment on the broadcast as you walked by Scobie. He said something to the effect of my bad or my mistake or something like that, like you should have let him kick it.
Well, after the game, he took the headsets off and looked to the coaches, according to Nantz or Simms, and said, my bad, it's my fault.
Oh, the coaches. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Like he was taking blame. I didn't see that. I'm not sure. I think Nantz might have, or Simms might have missed that one too, but. Well, I don't know. I'm sure he did kind of take blame for it there. Blame me. Bill Phillips asked him that question about, you know, not giving it to Le'Veon Bell. He certainly didn't rule out turning over the stone to get a new kicker, though. You know, he could have stood up there and says, Scobie's our kicker, he's our guy. He certainly did not do that. I think that's a noteworthy thing to point out. He had to be ticked off at those two kicks. If you're a coach, he feels like he's going to get blamed for this if the guy misses, and he is.
I'll just have Ben call a kicker from the sideline with his cell phone.
It was, you know what it was? It was a T-Mobile sidekick. They even still have those. They still have sidekicks.
That's what it would look like if you were. Yeah. Did you get a look at the pictures?
No, I haven't looked it up yet. That was just the first thing that came to my mind. You mentioned
now that you say that, yeah. That makes sense to me. Think it is.
It was a sidekick. That's what it was. Because, you know, people still use sidekicks in 2015. Because that's not the most 2007 thing ever.
You want the Chihuahua's email one more time?
Yeah, I do.
Here we go. Scobie dooby doo, kicks like poo. You're such a disappointment. See ya, Scobie doo, your days are through. It's time for unemployment. Second time around, not as good as the first.
I disagree. I disagree. I thought you executed it better, the sting of hearing it a second time. I mean, even if you see God, Ken, you're less impressed the second time around. You know, the first time there's a wow factor there.
You're like, yeah, I've done it once.
It's like Chevy Chase at the Grand Canyon. Okay.
Yeah.
Or it could be like a European vacation. Hey, kids, here we go. We know.
Yeah.
Big Ben. Parliament.
Sinatra could only sing My Kind of Town so many times before it got old, you know? Coming up at 1, the Pens Roundtable. Benzie, where are you headed this weekend? PNC Park for Reds Meaningless October Baseball?
I might go to Meaningless October Baseball. Yes, right. I might.
Wrigley Field, if they get to...
Do we get to go to Wrigley Field?
I don't know. You could go if you like. That'd be fun. Cubby Bear, you've been
I like the Cubby
talking
Bear.
About the Cubby Bear for weeks here now.
Hey, if we awesome. Fund it, I'll go. So that would be a Wednesday, though, right? It's a Wednesday?
Yeah, that'd be a
trick. Next Wednesday.
All right, so Wednesday, we'd have to be back. We'd have to be able to do the show on Thursday and be back in time for me to do my show at Redbeard's on 6th by 6 o'clock. So if we can make that happen, I'm in.
All right, we'll see what the Trib Shuttle Express has in store for us. Let's hope, though, it's a blackout part 3 next Wednesday. We don't have to go anywhere. We'll have free parking here on the north side. And Penguins tonight. We'll have a Penguins opener next Thursday. So much to talk about next week. See you, Benzie. Talk to you next Monday.